You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC. Welcome to another edition of the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Bump, and I'm excited to bring another edition to you as we look into the idea of the whole concept of, are we getting the next generation ministry wrong? There was a great blog post by my friend Jason Tilley that got me thinking a lot. And so I engaged him online and said, hey, can we do a podcast on this? And in fact, we've also done some dialogue in the Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group. And we're going to keep this dialogue going because we think it's important to consider the ideas. And so, Jason, welcome to this episode again. Good to have you back on the KMC.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
So you wrote this blog post, Are We Getting the Next Generation Ministry Wrong? And your summary goes like this. You said, children's ministry leaders spend the majority of their week planning for the weekend service, may not be using their creativity and talents to serve the church in the best way possible. So if you spend the majority of your time, energy, and creativity preparing the weekend service, you might be spending it in the wrong place. I'm just curious, why did you come up with this idea? Why would you say something like that?
Well, let's first talk about what are we supposed to do, what most children's ministry leaders believe that they're called to do, and that is to bring the gospel to children. Uh-huh. That's their role.
Right.
They're supposed to engage children, bring the gospel to them, raise them up in Christ. And the idea is that the time they put into preparing their ministry is supposed to be a time to impact the children. And when you look at statistics, let me take a step back and say where that has mostly happened in children's ministry in the last 30 years is in the context of the church's meeting place.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So I use that term because I myself am constantly challenging myself to make sure that when we mention the church, we're talking about people. We're talking about people. So not the building, not the hour, but that is where we meet. And that is where we gather to worship and hear the word and learn about Christ. And so churches for a long time, they had tons of they offered at their building lots of opportunities, lots of hours, right, lots of programs, lots of ways to engage kids with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so kids were spending 24 hours a month they could be spending at church.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
They could be spending it in Sunday school, in worship, in discipleship, in midweek programming, all of which were built around engaging kids with the scripture, helping them learn to pray, putting them around influential adults and other Christian kids to grow as the next generation of the church. Well, since 1959, church has been in decline. It's been attendance has been in decline in the U.S. since 1959. It's longer in Europe. But just watching these trends, you're seeing, you know, people have stopped coming to church.
Right.
And a lot of the recent conversation centers around, well, they watch it online or they engage it on the app or they catch up with it on a podcast. And my question is, okay, so that's within the last 10 to 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the other 40 or so, what was the reason? Because there was no engagement there. I mean, other than maybe church on the radio or church on television. The point is, I don't think it's an internet issue. I think it's been just a trend in our country as it moves away from a Christian-centric environment. Our culture has moved away from that. As our culture moves away from that, people's belief that the church is relevant to their life changes and they stop coming. All right? That's a whole other podcast.
which we will have to do, yes, for
and
sure.
There's plenty of people much smarter than me having that conversation. So I mean, that's like, but what I see is, and I saw this directly for 10 years as a children's pastor, people who identified as regular participants in the body went from showing up every week to showing up 1 to 2 times a month.
Right.
That's so what does that do? A kid who was at 24 hours a month in church goes to about 24 hours a year. So statistically, and this is and we did research on this. We actually did surveys and we looked at other surveys. And most of the things, it didn't matter what denomination you were, what size you were, what kind of church you were, anything. There was no – it was simply people stopped coming.
Right,
so they started – they're coming 1 hour every other week. Well, if you break that out, 1 hour every other week is 2 hours a month. It's 24 hours a year. So you go from 24 hours a month to 24 hours a year. So what happens? We saw a result. We saw – we saw in a recent Barna study, we saw the atheism double. Mm-hmm, we saw kids that come out that don't know what the Great Commission is, couldn't pick it out of the list, couldn't tell you what they're supposed to do with it.
Right.
We've seen people who are leaving the church before they have kids and not coming back after they have kids, which used to be a trend. They grew up in the church, they left it for a while, then they had kids and said, we got to get back in the church. That trend is stopping.
Right.
So what that amounts to is people are not coming to the meeting place at the meeting time. All right.
Correct.
That's what changed. And I think churches are trying to figure out ways to reach people. And we have the beautiful blessing of the internet that helps us do that in different ways. But with kids ministry, I think we're very far behind. So what that tells me is the time that we have with kids to impact them with the talent and gifts and abilities that God has given us has shrunk infinitesimally to where if you broke it out, you're basically spending half an hour a week with a kid.
Wow.
Where you are interacting with the kid, A to A, A to B, me to you.
Uh-huh.
You're interacting with the kid. So our calling is to do what? Is to reach kids with the gospel, correct?
Right. Yep. That's what most children's ministry leaders would say. That's my role.
Correct. So when you look at it that way and you say, I've got 40 hours a week, which is a serious joke if you're a children's pastor who – I don't know a children's pastor that works 40 hours a week, even if they're part-time. I mean, it's
like, – yeah, I was going to say it's
– there's no one that works that little amount of time.
Track of that.
If you have that much of your time and you're spending 80% of it prepping for this half hour – then I think you're overspending your time in one place. And to do that, I have to kind of take a step back and explain that I have my view of children's ministry that I've developed over the last 20 years that, to kind of see where I'm coming from on that. I always said that children's ministry is a three-legged stool, right? You have all of it to reach one thing, to reach the kids. All right. It's all intended to reach the gospel with the kids. But one leg of the stool is what you do directly to children. That's one leg. One leg of the stool is what you do to recruit influential adults. We call them volunteers to impact the life of those kids. And you have to do work to find the right type of influencer, really pour into them, train them up, get them ready. And so that's another ministry that you have as part of reaching kids is influencing these influencers. The third stool, leg of the stool, I've always said, is the parents of these children. All right? The parents of the children are the other influencer in those children's lives and the most important one. And you did a poll it was a Facebook poll in the Kids Ministry Collective where overwhelmingly the children respondents agreed that parents are the ones that are the biggest influencer in the life of the child and should be the primary discipler.
Right. Yep.
So what is that, you know, and then, so I did some other research. I looked at the Bureau of Labor Statistics and I saw that parents with children under the age of 18 in the United States spend 7 hours a week specifically taking care of children under 18.
Wow.
So feeding, talking with, right. And I mean, because, you know, obviously school, obviously extracurricular activities, there are things going on in the life of a parent and a kid.
Right.
So they do spend their time 7 hours on average engaging with the child. So they're getting 7 hours a week. You're getting 30 minutes. And I'm going, okay, our job is to reach kids with the gospel. When I look at how Jesus did it, he did it two ways, directly and through influence. So you got everything that Jesus did, preaching sermons, healing, teaching, and you had 12 guys that were going around with him, learning more closely than anyone who followed him. And then when he ascended, we had 12 guys that went out and created the church. And the church spread far much more than what he did in the 3 years, because he was doing it through them. Obviously, this is the work of the Holy Spirit. Right. It's not that Jesus couldn't have done it. This is how he chose to do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then he recruits a guy named Paul, who was at Saul, and who was so zealous about destroying this church. He's like, that's the guy I need to go
to build it.
If I could turn that, if we turn the zealot nature against 2:4, what are we going to do? And because he's God, that's not hard. He says, you're going to be for my church. And Paul has this huge explosion. Now, did Paul have a church? No. He planted, and then he taught through influence.
Right.
He wrote letters. Most of our New Testament are letters that Paul said, hey, this is what you should do. I long to be with you. I wish I was in your presence. So you know he wasn't there. And so he was either saying, hey, I can't wait to be back with you, or don't make me come down there. It just depended on who he was talking to at the time. So he moved through influence. So I'm going, okay, our job is to get the gospel to kids. Parents are the greatest influencers of their children's lives. If we can somehow spend some of our time in the week encouraging, advocating, and equipping parents to influence their child, we're getting more time reaching kids with the gospel.
Interesting. Okay, so if I hear you right, because I know that a lot, like I said at the very beginning, a lot of kidmin leaders are like, hey, I feel called to lead kids. So I'm up front presenting the gospel, you know, and teaching kids how to follow Christ. I'm there, you know, leading volunteers to do the same thing, you know, to make them small group leaders, those kind of things. Most churches have moved away from the Sunday school model to the small group model and being small group leaders and trying to build relationship in that little bit of time that we do have, which no doubt is overwhelming, to try to do in such a little amount. And it's obviously why small group leaders have to be more proactive than just Sundays, with that, so we can leverage what other time we can get. You know, you're basically suggesting that there could be a better use of time, because I think based on the other research poll that we did, a little informal poll on Facebook, was that most kidmin leaders are spending their time working on curriculum and volunteer development, or recruiting more specifically. It was pretty overwhelmingly clear that 90% of that, they're focused on those two things rather than partnering with parents, even though they also all agreed that partnering with parents was important. And like you said, they all agreed that parents were the primary faith givers. Basically, help me clarify, because I know people are going to listen and go, okay, so what should I be spending my time on? And how does that look like? So what does it mean to partner with parents? And you know, because I'm trying to take care of curriculum and volunteer management and fill holes, mm-hmm. create that Sunday experience. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to do that?
Well, one, I feel like that we have gotten ourselves into a place, and I'm a programmer by trade. All right. I started doing children's worship at Fellowship Church in Grapevine, Texas. That was my job, planning worship services every week, writing and creating and producing curriculum. And then we produced a curriculum called Elevate that people use in churches, and we used it for a long time. And then I moved on to an online program to help kids at home. So, I mean, programming is not something I am unfamiliar with, nor am I against or have any problem with.
Right.
But I do think we have to put boundaries on our curriculum, on our time spent there. Because the problem is, if you spend all your time in one place, then the others suffer. And I think sometimes we get this idea in our heads, and a lot of people do, that they want to create this amazing experience, so amazing that the kids will drag their parents back to church.
Right.
And I understand the sentiment behind that, and I don't think it's a wrong one necessarily, except that I feel like statistics says that's not going to happen. And that's not necessarily the children's ministry leader's fault. It doesn't mean they're not doing a good job. It doesn't mean they're not putting enough into their services. It just means that's where our culture is. And there's another element involved, which is parents need to bring their kids in order for you to engage with them. And if you're creating this amazing service and parents aren't bringing their kids or sending their kids, it's going, you're not having the impact you could.
Right.
So you're not reaching as many kids for the gospel.
Right. Because like you said, you know, we know, I think all of us would agree, you know, we have seen the frequency of attendance drop. So if we're spending, I mean, if you want to look at it, the return of investment,
mm-hmm.
the return of investment is not as high. I mean, if we're spending a lot of time creating those environments and you know, it's not to say you can't get volunteers to do that, but if you're a solo children's pastor, and I think that's kind of, I should say that too, that I think in some ways we're framing this because I think a lot of our listening audience are solo children's yeah. leaders. And they don't have a big team to go fan out all the set design and the curriculum development and the prep stuff and, you know, for everything. So a lot of them are doing it by themselves. And
sure.
So you're saying, hey, take a look and really count the cost here of if you're spending 60, 70% of your time every week just doing that and filling holes, you may not be getting the best return of investment.
Right. Because, I mean, like when Barna released their Gen Z study and showed what was going on in the lives of kids, a lot of response came back of, well, we've got to add more Bible teaching into our hour. We've got to add more relationship into our hour. We've got to do more of these things into our services. And truthfully, an hour is a lot to really try to put a lot of that pressure. That's a lot of pressure to put on one small span of time. I mean, if you look at major TV shows now, they run in arcs. They run in 13-episode arcs because the story they have is too big for one episode. They can only accomplish so much of that story in one episode. That's kind of the same way. When we're living out the story of the gospel, we can only accomplish so much in that 1 hour. Right. And there's a point where we have what I call diminishing returns, where you could do more in the service, but you won't get more as a result. And so that's why I use the term in the blog post of you need to have your services be meaningful and memorable. And when you feel like your service is meaningful and memorable and anything else you do doesn't make it more meaningful or memorable, will not have a greater impact, it's time to call it good.
Right.
You could always do more. You can always do more.
Right.
But the truth is you're only going to do – you're only going to have a certain impact regardless of how much you do for that 1 hour. And so I feel like that you need to put some limitations, understand those limitations and say, if I'm going to reach the most kids with the gospel, then I've got to make sure that this particular spot, this weekend worship service, has some boundaries so that I have more time to engage and advocate and equip parents. Because if I can get a parent to engage with their kid for 5 minutes a day for 5 days a week, I've doubled my impact on that kid's life. If I can get a parent to teach their kid to have their own personal devotional time, spend their own time in scripture, spend their own time pursuing God in prayer, I've quadrupled or more my impact on that kid's life. I just did it through a different channel.
Hmm.
And you have to see that. It's kind of like the term stay in your lane. You have to kind of make some lanes in your budget and your time management time and make sure that each lane is getting the right amount of attention and that one lane doesn't dominate the other two.
Right. And we have a real habit in children's ministry to swing pendulums hard both directions.
Right.
And I know that's not what you're trying to do here is to swing the pendulum to say, hey, you know, well, let's not worry about Sunday morning program. I think you made that clear there that it's not about, you know, we're saying ignore Sunday programming. You still want to make it quality because you still want kids pulling them.
Yes.
But if we're to turn our approach more towards parents, what would that look like for Sunday programming and that kind of thing? What are you thinking?
Well, I think that, you know, and I think I erroneously put this in the blog post because I don't know that I framed it well. And that's why I like having conversations, because it really makes us think about why we said what we said. But I kind of put a percentage on it. I said, you know, 20 or 30%. If you're spending more than that, you're spending too much. I really don't know what your life is. So it's kind of arrogant on my part to say only do this. I don't know that that's helpful. What I do think you need to do is look at each three as three areas that you need to spend a quality amount of time in and decide this is enough for the weekend program. Because you're right. I absolutely wouldn't want to give up on the weekend program. It's very important. It's important for relationship building. It's important for kids coming to hear the gospel. It's important for kids who don't have parents who want to disciple them. It's important for kids whose parents don't even come to church.
Right.
There's huge importance that goes on in that hour. Plus, how do you think kids learn how to worship God? They don't learn that at home necessarily. They learn personal worship, but they don't learn what corporate worship looks like. The church meeting is the only place they can learn that. And so, of course, you want to give it the right time, and there are some important things you want to accomplish. But I don't know that – I think really with your own gifting, every children's ministry leader is gifted and called to their role. I feel like you'll know through prayer and seeking what's enough.
Yeah.
And just make sure that enough is not all of your week, because if you're not impacting your – helping your build that influential adult base, that volunteer base, your ministry suffers if you're not engaging parents. And I think, okay, and so you're asking me, I'm kind of stretching out my answer here. You're asking me what that looks like.
Right. Yep.
One, I think Wayne Stock said it in the Facebook post, his response, that I'm coming with an ideal. He's not wrong. All right. So I don't disagree at all. One of our assumptions that we're testing out right now is that Christian parents who are active in the church, and by active, I mean come every other week,
mm-hmm.
want to disciple their children.
Right.
That's a belief I'm pursuing.
Yep.
It's what in the startup industry we call a leap of faith assumption.
Uh-huh.
Because you have to test it in order to find out if it's true.
Right.
And we're running some tests right now to find out if it's true.
Right.
But,
and we'll talk about – I want to talk about that because
– Yeah.
At the end. So, yeah, I'll come back to that.
So we're
going
to have some tests on that to figure that out. But one of the assumptions is based on, yes, they want to do it. So the trick would be, one, you want to spend time identifying parents who want to disciple their kids. Here's a hint. It won't be all of them.
Yeah.
All right? It won't be all of them. You then spend some time with that parent, getting to know that parent, having coffee, having lunch, just like you would do with your volunteers and your influential adults. Remember, this is the most influential adult in the life of the person you're called to reach.
Mm-hmm.
More influential than you will ever be. They're there in the person you're called to reach. And I'll tell you this, when you look at the breadth of ministry and how churches do ministry in the U.S., no one is focusing on that. Another thing people say is, well, I'm called to reach kids. The other part of the church is called to reach adults. And they do on the adult individual level. And parenting becomes part of that. But parenting is not all they're going to talk about. So parenting, and plus they're dealing with people who in their church who aren't parents. So they can't focus as much on parenting as you do. The good news is every parent you talk to in your ministry is, of course, a parent. So you actually are in a position to better equip these parents. Nobody studies these kids' worlds more than school teachers and marketers.
Right.
Marketers study them more than any of us.
Yep.
But you're the one that has more knowledge about the world they live in than any of that. And so what you need to do is say, okay, how do I get to know you? How do I be an advocate on how to disciple your kids? How do I equip them? Because I believe that most parents who do want to grew up in a church that they grew up in the church, but they may or maybe they didn't, but they may want to but they don't know how, or they feel like they feel overwhelmed. They feel like they can't. I mean, they do the same thing. We take our kids to school to learn math. We take our kids to church to learn about God. I would love to help them learn, but I don't know what to do. So obviously you're not spending all of your week trying to reach every parent, because that's not possible. You're identifying the parents who do want to do it, and you're equipping them to be successful. And you're talking that to them, and you're mentoring them. This is not about dumping resources in a parent's lap. I mean, we do that already. That's what we call a handout flyer.
Yeah, which becomes, which ultimately becomes a minivan floor liner.
Yeah, floor mats. Yeah, really good floor mats too.
Yeah, yeah.
But the truth is, that's not enough. If it was just enough to give you a flyer, kids would be discipled like crazy.
Right.
But it's, you have to be an advocate in the parent's life for the child to learn about Christ. You have to be an encourager that says, I believe you can do this. I know God's equipped you to do this. And this is something that he's going to work through you. And then, yeah, give them something to work with. And it doesn't have to be the latest, greatest digital tool. It doesn't have to be a book. It can be whatever you think works.
Right.
But that, I think, is what it would look like in a nutshell.
Okay. So let me give some pushback, because you in the blog post said 50% of the people who took a poll said they had no plan for their child's spiritual development.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at that, how do we help parents figure out that that should be, or they should have a plan? I mean, I think that's part of where you're going with this, right? Is basically say, hey, let's take some time and get intentional about investing. Instead of investing it in curriculum prep, volunteer management, let's invest some intentional hours towards helping parents come up with a plan. Right. Show them some simple life rhythms that they can do to do that, right?
Yeah. Well, in order for that, you have to have one of your own.
Uh-huh.
You have to have a plan. And first, let me say, I want to clarify, we don't want to spend all of our time in curriculum and volunteer management.
Exactly.
We do want to give it the appropriate amount of time.
Yes. Yeah.
But
sure.
But no, I think the first thing you need to have is you need to have a plan yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As a minister, you need to say, if a child comes through my ministry, what should they know? What should their behaviors be? What should I expect by the time they leave and the amount of time they're here? And so there's lots of different ways to do that. There's lots of different resource providers that help you kind of figure that out. And schools do it too. They're doing measurable. Your child should know this. I know coming out of third grade what my child should know in math, what my child should be in reading, and I know if she's exceeding or she's not exceeding. And now, does that necessarily mean fruit bearing? No, of course not. Fruit bearing comes from, you see the action in the life of the child. But you need to have a plan for what you would hope to see as your child comes through your ministry. And then you transfer that plan in a parent's mindset. And so I kind of use the term, the illustration I've been using is this orchard, right? So you're like an apple orchard expert. You know how to take care of apple trees, and you know how to help apple trees bear the best fruit. And you know how apple trees can just keep bearing fruit and keep growing and keep reproducing over and over again. The challenge is your orchard is in a bunch of people's backyards. So you're not going in there as their personal gardener. You're going in there and teaching them how to take care of their one tree. So they're learning how to manage their tree, help it bear fruit. Meanwhile, you're looking at the whole neighborhood and saying, how's all of our apples doing? So you take this role that's watching culture, it's watching trends, and it's looking for fruit bearing, and you're translating that for the parents so they can understand what should be going on with their child, where they're going, what they're doing, and how to best impact them with the gospel. And really, when I say impact them with the gospel, the way we parents tend to way overthink it, you're basically equipping them to do three things. Help their children learn how to read God's word.
Uh-huh.
And apply it to their life. Help them learn what it means to pray and talk to God. And finally, talking about God in everyday situations. That's discipleship. All that we can slap terms and we can make it sound more complicated,
Right.
God didn't want it to be. He never did. That's why he's like, when you walk along the road, when you get up, when you lie down, it's something you can do through the course of your everyday life.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we do this, if we're making that shift, then really the model you're describing is going to be something like, okay, so I need to have that end game in mind. I need a strategy for moving children to spiritual growth on Sunday and then throughout the week. And then I need to have some strategic, intentional things for parents. And so you're suggesting doing things, looking at partnering with parents a little differently, because I know one of the comments that was made on the Facebook group and this post was that on the other hand, kids ministries become too focused on equipping parents, and we're not really. Here's the comment. I'll just quote it. Sam Luce quoted this one. Said, I think kids ministries become too focused on equipping parents, and I'm not sure we're even doing that well. It's a tension we have to keep for sure, but we need to disciple kids because parents don't know how or want to. And we have to disciple parents. I'm just concerned that our, quote, equipping parents, unquote, rhetoric isn't translating to parents leading, but it's creating more hands-off kids pastors who aren't being as intentional about discipling kids.
I think that's a fair quote. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Because he's basically saying we're saying basically the same thing.
Yep.
It has to have its space.
Right.
And if you give it too much space, if you spend all of your time equipping parents, so if you take this information and say, well, since my parents have more time with kids than I do, so I should spend all of my time equipping parents, then you're leaving out 2/3 of your ministry.
Right. Right.
And my advocacy is that we don't leave out 1/3 for the other, for anything.
Yeah.
We spend 1/3 of our time or whatever is appropriate.
We don't want to pigeonhole the times. Yeah.
We're spending an appropriate amount of time equipping our parents. So if you've got 10 parents that you know want to disciple their kids and you spend an hour a week equipping one of those 10 parents, great. You're making steps to bring the gospel to children.
Yeah, and honestly, those parents are going to influence other parents. So sure. You are taking the model, and so let's go to that. So describe the model that you're looking at. Give people a good picture of it, of what. Again, I don't want to use that word ideal because that's not where we're going. But
I think it's okay to present an ideal because ideals are what we strive for.
Okay. So then in your mind, what would be an ideal balanced approach for kid men to start considering now?
Okay. So the first thing begins as you have a plan for what happens when a kid comes through your ministry.
Yep.
And that plan involves who's influencing that child. And how they're being influenced.
Right.
So you say, okay, so for me personally, and my weekend programming, now, and again, when I talk about weekend programming, there's lots of different ways people do it.
Yep.
I'll tell you, my bent has never been the one where it's all riding on me.
Right.
I believe that's a great way to put a bullseye on your back for the devil to take you out. If everything's resting on you, yes. Guess who's going down?
Yeah, that is not a healthy approach when you build the children's ministry around yourself, for sure.
No, you don't build it around yourself. But whatever I do to directly impact kids, right? I have a plan for that.
Yep.
It could be what I'm teaching that year, what I want them to learn, what kind of fruit I want them to bear, that's what I'm measuring from that particular experience.
Right. Okay.
Then I talk about, okay, so then I look at what am I doing to influence a child through influential adults and other kids.
Okay.
That's so kind relationship. Of
the, right, the small group leaders.
Small group leaders, Sunday the volunteers, the yep. However you want to structure it.
Yep.
There are people that are influencing that kid's life, and they involve influential adults and other Christian kids. So what am I doing to accomplish that? I have a plan for that.
Yep.
The third plan is, how am I helping those parents who want to disciple their kids do so in a meaningful and memorable way to build a consistent faith in the life of their child.
Right.
Knowing that by doing that, I'm maximizing all of my time. All of my time that I can possibly reach that child, I have hit every channel. So in order to fill my calling with the gospel, I have to hit these three channels well in order to make sure that they all lead to one destination.
Yeah.
That child.
Right.
What does that look like for you? It's totally up to you. And God, through prayer and pursuit of Him, will give you that. I have no question about it. That's why I put in there, God has put some talented, equipped people into places of ministry to reach kids. And as long as they're trying to do everything they can to reach kids, I feel like God's going to bless their work. But part of that is seeing every way they can and pursuing that. So that's an ideal. So an ideal children's pastor is spinning those three plates, basically, if you want to use the term of spinning plates. And so that you have to keep giving time to each plate,
right,
in order to keep it spinning. But you notice it's only three. It's not 50.
Right.
It's three. That means you would have to say no to some things.
Right.
Because you're like, I don't need to do programming all the time if I don't have the maximum amount of kids in this programming. So that, I mean, it means you go, okay, I'm going to do some weekends. I'm going to do some events. Whatever we think is going to get the reach the most kids in our context, in our unique context.
Yeah.
Because that. But then I'm spending time working with parents, moving. So you say no to things. You sometimes you maybe a curriculum. A lot of people don't like curriculum. I'm like, there's a lot of resource providers who put a lot of time into creating something.
Oh yeah.
That if you would make sure that you don't put the equal amount of time into it.
Well, then
you can maximize.
Yeah, I was recently at a student ministry conference and heard a guy say, and he was using a very well-known curriculum, and then he proceeded to say that he spent like 8 hours a week, 8 hours editing this curriculum to make it fit. And the fact that he also tied in the fact that he had to Google Bible verses about pushed me over the edge. I was not thinking holy thoughts at the moment when he started. I'm like, I'm sorry, but you're an idiot. Okay, sorry.
Whoa!
That was mean, but I'm sorry, folks. It was driving me bonkers to sit here and listen to this guy because he was talking about how do I find more margin in my life, and I'm going, I can give you 8 hours a week back. Stop trying to edit 8 hours. Tweak it, move on. Because what other things is he missing because he's spending so much time in that area? And I think that's the challenge that we're pushing in the conversation here is, are we spending the time in the right things to help families move forward, to help kids move forward in their faith? And ultimately, we're just challenging kid ministry leaders to say, look, you don't have to. And you don't have to spend all your time on curriculum development or volunteer management. Find a model that works for you as far as setting up your volunteers and stay on it. Don't feel pressured. You have to do what the current trends are.
Right.
Do what works for you. Make sure it works with your leadership. But the biggest return of investment spiritually is to start helping our families learn how to use the time that they have on a regular basis well. So, Jason, what would you say, what leadership and strategic shifts have to happen if we're going to do this well?
I think, one, you got to recognize that it needs to be a priority. I think we have to accept what information God is bringing to us through these researchers and statistics that make it clear that if you're basing all of your ministry on just what happens on the weekends, you're not putting the most time you can into kids. So we have to admit that. It's a hard thing to admit.
Right.
I get it. I feel the same way. I mean, when I was first heard about the decline of church attendance, my first response was, well, that's not happening here, because I stayed in this bubble of what's going on at my church at that moment. And when I took a step back and saw, no, that's actually was happening here, just like it was happening everywhere else. I was just in a church that was so big I didn't notice it. Then it was like, oh, that's very eye-opening. And it's very hard to take when your job was basically creating amazing weekends and going, our weekends get better and better, but we don't have as many kids coming. Why? Mm-hmm. And realizing that it's not just me. It's not just the church down the street. It's everybody everywhere. So that's the first step, is to go, okay, this is not the best way. This is not the only way. It may not even be the most effective way we're reaching kids.
Yeah,
it's an important way, and it has important needs that we can't replicate anywhere else. So we have to keep giving it priority, but only giving it what it needs. So I think that churches, leaderships who are saying, man, I want to have the most amazing weekend or the best weekend in town. First off, if you're in a town with churches and your church is saying, we have the best children's ministry in this town, I'm like, why is that even a comparison? We're the capital C church. It doesn't matter. I mean, who are you beating? Who are you? It's like, there's not like the devil's got a church and he's got a better children's ministry than you.
Yeah.
It's the church down the street that's also a church, just like you are.
Right.
So we should get out of that mindset of having the best children's ministry in town, because this is not market share. This is the church. But that's one. That's another way. That's another paradigm that needs to shift. The other is there's a big ideal out there, and it is an ideal, and I love the ideal, that we should have volunteers in place every week, same volunteers in the same roles, uh-huh, committed for like 40 weeks a year. Right. And that is an ideal, and it's a great ideal. And the churches that have been able to do it, it really is a nice environment. But the churches that have been able to do it have had to put a ton of financial resources and human capital into it. We're not talking about a solo children's pastor. We're not talking about a children's pastor with an intern and a part-time help. We're talking about churches that have people who are volunteer coordinators for the entire eight, for just one grade, right?
Yep.
That is going to give you that kind of ideal. And I think that you can get there with less. I think the time then, it goes back to time, it takes longer. So if you want to go from a model where people are serving consistently once a month and you say, I want the same person serving every week, you're going to need to give yourself about 18 months to 2 years and put some serious effort into getting there. So don't feel like you have to get there this week. Don't feel like you have to get there in the next 6 months. That's unrealistic in our culture. So basically, I like to go for right now, I like to advocate for consistency in volunteers, not constancy. So if they're willing to serve at the same hour once a month, build up your volunteer base with that and let that be a place you move forward from, not that be a destination. But don't try to jump into this massive volunteer effort that takes a lot of effort of recruiting and in time spent in bringing in volunteers. Don't make that something you're trying to do in 2 weeks, because you'll spend too much time on it. You need to keep your leadership and on board with the idea that if you want us to get there, give me enough time to do it. Don't make it a quick thing, because it really becomes a difficult process to get and maintain.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, man, we're really just getting started with this conversation. And as we get ready to wrap up, one of the things that I wanted to look at is you talked about this whole idea of testing with parents and all that. I want to give people some food for thought of some potential ways of what this could look like to say, I'm going to intentionally partner with parents. So I thought it'd be good to kind of end our episode with some practical ideas. I know you guys are running a test. It's something that I'm actually adapting into my own new ministry, where I'm going to be more intentional with a few families and talk about some of the resources we have, some of the ways that they can leverage those. And because I love how Stephanie Jackson put it on our Facebook post about, that maybe we should consider the switch from using the drinking from a fire hose approach to start presenting a strategic soaking equipping strategy.
That's good.
So what would that look like? Because I know your idea of is instead of throwing a bunch of resources at them and saying, here, good luck, pick one, you're trying to figure out a way to give bite-sized tools, morsels, nuggets to think about during the day. And there are some apps out there that kind of do this. They feed them along the way. But help somebody who's a solo pastor, as if they're like, yeah, you know, I really do want to get more intentional about partnering with parents, but I don't know where to start or how to get going.
Okay.
Help
sure.
us out there a little bit.
Okay, so one of the things – I talked about this earlier. One of the things that we were – at the Ministry Accelerator were saying is we believe Christian parents want to disciple their kids. So we start with that assumption. And it is by definition an assumption because we don't really know. We could be wrong. But we say, okay, we're gonna go with that assumption. And then what we want to do is test that assumption to see what barriers are keeping a Christian parent from discipling their kid. So a barrier might be what's preventing me from actually doing it. You mentioned there were a lot of good apps out there, and there are a lot of good materials. However, most of the ones I've encountered involve the parent having to actually go out to the app. And I say go out like you're walking out into a field, but you basically got to pick up your phone, click on the app, look at the material, and engage with it with your kid. And we believe that for some parents, that is too much. And I know that sounds silly, but in our world of constant streaming communication, constant busyness, constantly doing something, actually remembering to go out, activate an app, and engage the kid with the content in the app can be a challenge. So our test was, well, okay, what if at certain points of the day, twice a week is what we're running right now. If twice a week you got access to a piece of some content and some talking points, would you engage it? And so we've got four churches actively testing this out. We're not done with the test yet, so I don't have all the results. It may be a total failure, and that's okay. We're not in the success or failure game. We're in the learning
right.
game.
Yeah,
and so
correct.
What we're doing is we're trying to learn, is this a way to get parents to engage their kids? So we have some content. I put together some content. It's got a short animated video, a little brief talking point, a written prayer, and some things you can talk about with your kids. It's very simple. Takes about 5 minutes. It's mostly good for an elementary branch. You can talk about it with your teenagers and stuff, but the parents have to do some thinking to use it, because I wasn't too concerned with what you were getting so much as when you were getting it. And so we're sending it out in MailChimp, so it's trackable.
Mm-hmm.
And we're basically tracking whether or not they're opening it up, whether or not they're reading it. We're sending out once in two different channels of communication. So the churches are choosing how they do it. Some churches are sending email and text. Some churches are sending email and Facebook. They're just sending one method they can track so they can find out how it goes. And so there's 8 weeks worth of devotionals. If a church wants to try this and wants to possibly join us in this test, then you can email me, jason@ministryaccelerator.org. And I would be happy to send you the content and some research questions.
Yeah.
It's all free. None of it's, I mean, we're not trying to create a product here. We're trying to learn how parents, if parents will engage with stuff. And if we find out through testing with a bunch of people that parents won't do this, we'll look for the next thing.
Right. We'll ask another question, you know.
We're trying to figure it out, and that's all we're trying to do at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love about this. I think it's stirred up some good conversation in the Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group, and I hope it will, or even over on Ministry Accelerator. We definitely want people to engage wherever they can get on and ask questions and push back and wrestle with, offer up solutions and ideas, get in on the test.
Like
I said, I'm going to be doing it. I'm picking up about six families, a couple from different age groups, because I'm real curious to see if it matters what age group. So I'm going to do a preschool family, an elementary family, a middle school family, and a high school family.
Nice.
And that's how I'm going to approach the test that you guys are doing and joining with you to say, okay, let's be intentional. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to figure out what the families could look for, what they need, and mm-hmm. then see how we can assist them. And
I think I like the way you approach it. The important thing is not that we're finding success. We're trying to learn what parents will engage with. And we don't look at each test as whether or not, we don't put the pressure on the test to be anything more than that.
Right.
It's just a test.
Yeah.
We're just learning. We're trying to understand our families better. And the better we understand our families, the better we can get those kids the gospel.
Yes.
And that's what it boils down to.
That's what it's all about, for sure.
Yep.
So, Jason, give us your contact info again. If somebody wants to get to connect up with you, how can they do that?
The website is ministryaccelerator.com. It's our site where we post all our content. And you can reach myself at jason@ministryaccelerator.org, or there's my partner John Tillman. You can reach john@ministryaccelerator.org, and we're happy to talk with you, engage with you if you have any questions, and we'll let you know what we're trying to learn and maybe learn from you. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for taking time. We are going to do another episode as we are going to pull in some other people to this conversation and look at some of this struggle of partnering with parents and what other people are doing, how they're doing it, where they've had success, where they've had failure, so that we can continue to push this forward. Because like Jason just said, our ultimate goal is to see kids come to Christ and then to reach that full potential in Him. So that they can go out and make more disciples. That's the ultimate goal, that we keep that Great Commission moving. And so, Jason, thanks for taking the time out today.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll look forward to another episode of the KMC real soon.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group, or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.